50-minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Peters Township. Should have done that with Tyler a few minutes ago. That's my bad. Love having TK on. We'll do that again Monday with free agency upon us in the NHL already. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider. Back to it. We go all access early with Aditi Kinkabwala because we'll have Pirates Reds reaction later on this afternoon. So she was very kind to move things up, even though she just had surgery. That's why she's not on the video stream. So hopefully everything went swimmingly with that, Aditi. Good to talk to you on this Wednesday. How are you?
I'm great. I have the greatest dentist. Dr. Kevin did a great job. So, although I didn't really like all the rules that he gave me after you have dental surgery.
Aditi, we have the same dentist, Dr. Kevin, and he is terrific.
He fixed up
old Mulsey's teeth big time. I was a mess of cavities, and now I've got beautiful, beautiful teeth.
And this isn't even an ad. I should talk to him about that.
Oh, no, you guys could do a duet together. You and Mulsey could do a duet ad.
I mean, I've been doing ads for them for a while. Perhaps we could perform a duet and talk about the services at Dr. Kevin's practice. Now we're going somewhere, Aditi.
Seriously, this is where we need to put our heads together. I was just talking to Dr. Kevin about whitening my teeth, and maybe we could do an ad with our shiny smiles.
I've always thought about that. I've thought about two things lately. Should I go on Ozempic, and should I have my teeth whitened?
No, hold on, Aditi. He's thought about three things. Those two he just said. The key word in the back now with us is nitrates.
I'm afraid of them.
Pony is terrified of nitrates. He's putting on a hot dog eating contest next week,
mind you. Yes,
we are,
July 3rd.
But the man
producer
himself,
hot dog eating contest.
He is terrified of nitrates now. He is thinking about them 24/7.
Are you participating? Are you going to be eating the hot dogs or no?
No, I'm not even officiating. I'm just presiding. I'm the MC of it. It's just for the producers. It's July 3rd. Winner gets a $500 cash prize. 10-minute... time limit. Eat as many hot dogs as you can.
Sorry. I still do not understand how this ever became a competition and a thing because, that's all
the
I
way
can
that,
say.
Listen, I like...
Wait, make that noise again.
Are you recording it and then are you going to play it over and over?
Yes, I wanted a cleaner version of that so we could play it as a drop.
You could play it every time I give an opinion Pony doesn't like. He'll just play that drop. No, I agree with you, Aditi.
Thank you.
That's what I say. Yeah.
Aditi, can I give you an off-the-beaten-path June topic? This was brought to my attention.
Ooh, always. I feel like this is what you always do.
This comes from one of our listeners who passed this along to us. You were in the Steelers locker room a lot. Do you remember a long snapper named Cameron Canaday?
Yes, I do, actually.
He was on a podcast, because everyone has a podcast now, and he was asked about those teams that had great offensive fireworks but never won. And he said, well, I was there for that, and everyone knows about the frayed relationship between Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. And he said the reason why those two guys ended up butting heads was because Antonio Brown had a, quote, Michael Jordan mindset. He wanted to practice like crazy at all times. He wanted to practice every day and get better every day. And that was just not Ben's thing. Ben wanted the rest. Ben was older. Ben did not want to practice every day and get better in practice every day. And that irked Antonio Brown. This is coming from the long snapper of those teams. Do you think there's a kernel of truth in that?
I do, and I only say that because I remember actually having the conversation with Antonio Brown about, you know, as much as he changed in his time in Pittsburgh, it's really important to remember how hard he worked. And he would be there every day after practice on the jugs machine. He was the guy that took down notes on every single thing Todd Haley did, had a notebook for every single year that he was in the NFL, would go back and study that notebook and highlight and take additional notes at night. I mean, I remember Todd Haley telling me that Antonio would recite something back to him that he'd said 2 years ago. And the only way he'd remember that is because he was studying those notebooks. He was very diligent. And I remember later on in later years, as Antonio was getting a little more frustrated by a variety of things, not the least of which was that Mike Tomlin had said to him, you're done with all the individual stuff right now. The only thing that you should be hunting is Lombardi trophies. And for a time, Antonio kept a jersey of one of the famed wide receivers. I can't remember Stallworth's friend, who it was, hanging up in the locker next to his, and it was autographed, and underneath the autograph were the four Super Bowls. And I remember Antonio telling me, that's what I want now. And so as things were getting kind of, it's hard, you know, fracturing, as there was a little bit of a fissure with Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, I do very clearly recall having a conversation with Antonio Brown where he was expressing frustration that the quarterback wasn't putting in the same amount of work or time or hours in his view, in his perception, as perhaps other players were, himself included. And I remember this so clearly, guys, because I remember having to say to him, it's not, the rules aren't the same for everyone. This is just the way the world works. And you may not like this. You may think that everybody should show up at the same time and leave at the same time, and everybody should put the same amount of time in the film room and post practice and all of that. But in this organization, that's just not how it is. Now, in some there are, you know, in New England, that's what it was like. That's how Bill Belichick ran things. But that's never been how Mike Tomlin runs things. And I've said this a lot, so I don't know that this is that surprising, but there are certain things in life we just need to accept. Whether they're fair or not, we need to just accept that's the way it is. And for Antonio, I think he really, really struggled to accept that the star quarterback who had already won two Super Bowls and had so many years of experience on him could sort of do things the way that he wanted to do, or didn't have to do things the way the wide receiver wanted him to do them.
I mean, do you think that's almost then, not to, I'm not even saying this that I would blame Roethlisberger, but we know for his position how naturally gifted he was at playing it. Way more naturally gifted, let's say, than Brady, as far as mobility and size and everything else. Do you think that that was just something that naturally was always going to be a problem? If you know you don't have to do something, maybe you're not going to be compelled to do it because, hey, what if I twist my ankle training so hard and then I'm not the Big Ben that I'm used to being? Like, I'm not necessarily excusing it, but I can see where it comes from for him.
I hear what you're saying, and I don't want to speculate on what his mindset was. I've never known Ben Roethlisberger to be a guy who's afraid of, I'm afraid of getting hurt. But there is truth to this idea that if you have immediate success without working insanely hard or without feeling like you have to outwork everyone else for your spot, then what drives you to outwork everyone else? You're talking about a first-round pick versus a sixth-round pick in Roethlisberger versus Brady. You're talking about a guy who came in, who was basically number two and then very quickly anointed, as opposed to Brady, who was originally fifth on the depth chart. So, you know, it's like Michael Jordan not making the varsity in high school. How much did that make him the player that he is?
He called out the old man in his Hall of Fame speech.
I know.
The worst part was he was like,
I think that when you have to work for something, I mean, we talk about this in my business. My producer and I talk about this as people who are on television, someone who just kind of immediately fell into a great spot versus someone who's had to claw from the bottom. Is there a different work ethic Is there a different work ethic there? Is there a different approach to how you do things? And I mean, there are many reasons that that team that had arguably the best wide receiver in the game, a future Hall of Fame quarterback, one of the best running backs, one of the top offensive lines, a defense littered with first round picks, that unit has only one trip to show to the AFC title game. Yes, you would expect that a group that was like that would have produced more. There are many reasons for that, and there are plenty of reasons why the Antonio Brown-Ben Roethlisberger relationship, which should have, in my humble opinion, gone down as one of the three greatest quarterback wide receiver duos ever, ultimately fractured. But I can validate that what Canada is saying, follows along with a lot of conversations I myself had.
Aditi, you're the best. Hope your mouth heals, and we'll talk again on the video stream next week. You're the best.
Thanks. That was a lot of talking for an implant, right?
Yes.
I put a dental implant in there, and see, it's how great Dr. Kevin is. Malzi, we got to get on the phone with Dr.
Perfect.
Kevin and see.
I'll have our people call their people and then call your people.
See you, Didi.
I have no people. Bye.
That was good stuff from Aditi on the AB Roethlisberger thing, that one of their former teammates, the long snapper of all people, went on a podcast and talked about.
Let me ask you a question about that. Knowing what we know, forget about what we know about, especially the way it ended with AB off the field here, right? Demanding a trade. Wouldn't you think in most cases the player who is reportedly the one who wants to do all the hard work in practice would be the guy viewed as more sympathetic in that situation? Or like, hey, yeah, why wouldn't...
Of course.
But I don't think it was that way here.
No, it wasn't. Not even close, because...
The titles outweighed, and people just said, well, Ben can do what he wants.
Yeah, but I also think that AB went about it the wrong way. If that was the one thing that caused the schism between the two guys, and then he didn't throw footballs at him or punt footballs at him and storm off and quit not playing the last game, if he had handled it more professionally and... We found out he wanted traded out of Pittsburgh because he didn't think Roethlisberger was working hard enough. Of course, there would still be people who sided with Ben because he won two Super Bowls, and the quarterback is a more important position than wide receiver. But he would have more sympathy if he had just done it that way. Because
he would have been unbelievable, by the way, had he played his whole career with Brady. Not because we know Brady's the best to ever do it or will be for another year till Mahomes is. But don't you think he and AB, work ethic-wise, would have been like...
That's why Brady wanted him.
The perfect pairing. That's... But if they play together their whole career, what kind of records is AB setting out there? I mean, he's putting up gargantuan numbers because they're both drafting off of each other.
Yep.
They're both sixth-round chip-on-the-shoulder guys. I think that he put up incredible numbers here. You know how I feel about him as a player. I think it's even greater if he plays with a guy like Brady who is wired the same way.
You know, he went on Ryan Clark's podcast, and I thought he actually said something. There was so much gibberish in there, but he said one thing that I thought that resonated with me. He said, people love to criticize and get on my ass for the things I say and do, and for good reason. He's done...
Wait, he admitted that it was for good reason?
No, I'm saying that
now.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, we get on him for...
Yeah, justifiably.
Justifiably,
now.
For some of the off-field stuff especially. But his point was, look at where I was in life. I grew up in like the worst neighborhood in Miami. I had no adult supervision. I had no parental guidance. I was taking a jitney to school every day. I made it. By my own sheer determination and work ethic, I pulled myself out of a horrible situation, became one of the best wide receivers in NFL history. You know how easy it would have been for him to just have gotten lost in that lifestyle,
well, most people,
all odds stacked against him.
Yeah, most people you don't ever hear about and they don't make it.
Yeah, so when he said that, it momentarily it reminded me, this guy, I call him all kinds of names. He's a knucklehead. He's an idiot. He's frittered his life away in a lot of ways. But he did not have many advantages in life. He's not 6'4", 210. He's not Randy Moss. He's not Terrell Owens.
He's a 5'9" guy in a sport that's dominated by freaks.
Yeah, it's not like baseball, golf, or hockey where your socioeconomic situation or your parents or the coaching you get has a lot to do with where you ultimately end up in your sport. Like, the odds of him, based on where he was born and where he came from, becoming a multimillionaire, were probably one in a million.
I would choose my words carefully here because I don't want to come off sympathetic to him. But in calling it this, it's going to sound that way. I don't mean it to. But like the old, you know, like a Greek tragedy, there's always a tragic figure in like many plays and whatever. The tragedy of him is he crawled out of all of that on his own 2 feet, right? On his own strength of will, you called it.
Mm-hmm.
But that same mentality, I think, is why you get the sense he never pays people who you know, do business with him now, didn't want to pay chefs. I always just got the sense of, I deserve all this. You should be lucky to be around me. No trust for anybody, no nothing. No ability to see anybody else as somebody not out probably to get them.
Yeah, an extremely narcissistic behavior,
right?
Because he got himself out of that situation,
right?
And he, you know, loved himself and valued himself that way. Aditi seemed disgusted by the hot dog eating contest. More information on this, July 3rd, 3 o'clock. I still need to ask Craig if we're going to be allowed to have listeners come and watch it in person, because there should be space in there. It is $500 to the winner of the contest. We need to call. We might have to have Sonny Gray do this during the next break. He's got to call the trophy shop that you're talking about.
Okay.
To get the trophy set up in time for Wednesday, to see if they can do that for us. If someone is involved in trophy engraving who would like to give us one and be a part of the first annual
lot of trophy lovers
PM team hot dog eating contest, well, that would be great too if you'd want to call in to 412-928-9370 and help us with that. Did I mention the Jimerson call?
What's the deal with that?
We've reached out to Jimerson.
Yeah, we have.
We've reached
out
through intermediate. No, we reached out through a middleman, Marianne Ritchie, the PA announcer with Ryan Mill over at Penguins games. She has a relationship with Jimerson. She sent a message. We're still waiting to hear back. If we don't get Jimerson, then we've got to
put out the siren call.
We've got to find someone else to sing the anthem. Donnie is pounding the table for Starkey to sing the anthem.
The question is, does Starkey actually take it as an opportunity to show people, hey, I can actually sing when I want to? Because I've heard him carry a tune. He's not bad. Or does he do the, as you, I can't unhear the idea that he would go, oh, he would do,
you know, that like tugging at it.
Oh, hairy horse follicles. That one.
Yeah. Who else in the media business is known for being in a band or singing on the...
Gentilly just looks like a guy who's in a band, but he's not.
Jeff in South Park's in a band, but it's a metal band. So is he going to come in here and scream, "Oh Canada"?
Who they can see by the dawn's early light?
We got to figure that out.
Someone, glowing hearts, we see the rock.
Someone on Twitter suggested Zeiss.
Can you imagine if we didn't know this about Zeiss and he just started crooning like it sounded like Marvin Gaye at the NBA All-Star Game in 83?
I think he's got a better chance of sounding like Roseanne Barr from Paul.
What if he did like a Carl Lewis? He butchered one too. Thank God for
I'm going to make up for it. That's what he said. I'm going to make up for it now.
Wait, did he do it before he was actually racing? Like in like a...
No, he did it at a Bulls-Nets game.
That's what I thought. How did he intend to make up for it?
Because he heard the boos in the middle of the anthem, and then he stopped and said, "All right, folks, this is where I make up for it. You hate me now, but wait till you hear the last few
and then
lines."
It was just
and
as bad,
just
right?
As bad, and Jordan was giggling. All right, we are just minutes away from Pirates-Reds reaction, and we are scheduled to be joined by Jason DeLay after he had two doubles, drove in two runs in the sixth inning that broke the game open. He also caught Luis Ortiz today, his first time starting this season after being the long man in the bullpen and being the guy that got the bulk of the work in these bullpen games. He was outstanding. The Pirates did not put a crummy lineup out there today. They went with real hitters. They did not bench anybody, and they take down the Reds 6-1. I think I'm going to troll Kirk Herbstreit and send him and at him in a tweet and say, hey Kirk.
How about like Mr. Red getting beaten up?
Nice job by your Reds against the Pirates this year, buddy.
Adam Gretz, who we like very much on this show, tweets out, "Mr. Met seems like a lot, looks happy and fun. Mr. Red looks like he would tie somebody to some railroad tracks." Thoughts?
Does Mr. Red have a old-timey mustache
yeah,
like Raleigh
does.
Fingers?
Yes, he does. So he looks like a cartoon villain from a train robbery type of movie.
What was the name of the bad guy from
Bullwinkle and Rocky?
Yeah. Let's see if Mike Florio can help us with that. Brought to you by JP Roofing, your hometown roofing expert.
Boris Badenoff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
He's on it.
And Natasha.
Nah, everyone knows Natasha.
Moose and Squirrel. Moose and Squirrel. That's all I remember from that show.
More than we did.
Hey, Mike.
Well, I'm old. I grew up in the time of Bullwinkle. You guys grew up in the time of
yes.
Rugrats.
Hold on. I might actually have to get Donnie to clip that. I grew up in the time of Bullwinkle.
What an era. Yeah. The anyway. Me decade was the 70s. How about the Bullwinkle decade?
Just for anybody out there who's of my vintage, Saturday mornings were like sacred territory because that was the only time we got to see cartoons. That was it. So it was with great excitement that you sprang out of bed on Saturday morning to go downstairs because you couldn't just turn on the Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon or
Now you're speaking my language. Now you're speaking my language, Mike. Yeah. So, I mean, Pony and I are both getting very close to 40. I am a little closer than he is. But I remember two things. Saturday morning cartoons. And then when you got home from school, you only had like a two-hour window to catch Spider-Man or X-Men. And then that was it, man. And people don't... Kids these days, as I get up onto my soapbox and scream at them to get off my lawn, kids these days don't understand how tough it was to catch the cartoons back in the day.
And how about
and
a cereal?
Everywhere you go...
Did you have a cereal of choice for the Saturday mornings? Did you have a cereal of choice, Mike?
Lucky Charms.
Ooh.
Extra lucky. Now, everywhere you see parents with kids... They've got them watching cartoons on their phone and they don't have earphones for them.
Mm.
So anyone out there listening, I beg you, when you're in a public place with your kid, get them earphones. Nobody wants to hear that in a public place.
We have, our older one is 5 and a half and he does watch his little tablet sometimes, but he's got the headphones hooked up to it, Mike. So we are way ahead of you. We're very considerate parents in that regard.
Mike, I have here a quote from Kenny Pickett's personal quarterbacks coach saying today on NJ.com, so I think the Newark Star-Ledger's website, that he feels, Pickett's quarterbacks coach, that the Steelers basically pushed a false narrative about him after the trade, that this was orchestrated by the Steelers to try to make Kenny Pickett look bad to defend moving on from him. If this is true, how damning is that statement about the Steelers that they would do that in a way of making the Pickett trade look better?
How do I put this as gently as possible? Did the Steelers need to make him look bad? Did he need any help to look bad? Did we see nothing from him in 2 years that would make us say, wow, there's a keeper? You know, Bill Walsh always used to say if he would see a quarterback do one special thing, a single time, he'd figure out how to get him to do it all the time. What did Kenny Pickett ever do that makes you say, wow, we need to harness that and do it all the time? He did nothing special. It was all meat and potatoes, simple, basic stuff. So I get why they did it. And it had to be bad for the Steelers to admit failure of a first-round pick at the quarterback position and throw him overboard after 2 years. I don't think he needs any help as it relates to narratives that make him look bad. He made himself look bad in the 2 years he had to show that he could be an NFL quarterback at a high level.
I just don't, I don't really buy what his private coach is saying here, Mike, in part because there was no indication from the Steelers publicly that they were unhappy with him. Omar Khan even like gave him sort of a vote of confidence still before this all went down. It would absolutely, and by the way, just the few things I've heard behind the scenes all tells the opposite story, that he really was unhappy with it. This sounds more like quiet late June damage control attempts than anything to me. I don't know about you.
No, I agree with you. I look, Kenny Pickett pays this guy. So maybe that's all I needed to say in response to the last question. Kenny Pickett pays this guy. He's got a vested interest in making Kenny look good, so he's going to push back against anything that might make him look bad.
How about Kabali's writing this week, Steelers Insider, that the Steelers would like to sign Justin Fields to an extension before the season, but they would not give him, they would scoff, they would balk at a Jordan Love type extension. And Chris and I were talking about this earlier in the show. Like, how do you thread that needle then? You think that, I don't think Justin Fields would take a Jacoby Brissett deal or a Sam Darnold deal, Mike. I don't see them finding the middle ground of getting something done before the season. I wouldn't want to get something done before the season with Fields because I'd want to see how it plays out with Russell Wilson first. Your thoughts?
Guys, I think it would have to have triggers that would pay him this year, next year, the following year, based on how much he plays, how well he plays. And for that, hey, you know what? I'll just become a free agent next year. That's the thing. Justin Fields has the ultimate leverage here. I'm not signing anything. My contract expires after this year. You could have picked up my fifth-year option. Obviously, you weren't going to do it. I'm a free agent in March. I'll hit the open market, and we'll see who wants to give me a chance to be their starting quarterback. Because, you know, this is Wilson versus Fields. It's like, and I may have said this here last week, it's Costanza versus Lloyd Braun for the water pick. One of them's going to win it. And if Fields doesn't win it, he'll go somewhere else and try to win it there.
Mike, how much did Fields' reputation around the league, in your opinion, or to your knowledge, suffer just with how things went in Chicago for him in terms of lack of overall results? Like, would he be in demand as a free agent, you think, to be somebody's starter if he just left the Steelers after 1 year?
It depends on what the other options are. And we've evolved to a point in free agency where every year there are more than a few veteran quarterbacks with starting experience available to be signed. It's amazing. It wasn't that way for a long time. And now it's that way every year. There's a lot of potential free agents next year who are, wow, hey, this could be a good quarterback. I think Fields wasn't at whatever his ceiling is yet. You've got a dysfunctional team traditionally, but for 1985, you've got a guy who had developed quickly into the most dangerous running option at quarterback in the NFL. And before Chris Sims had a chance to take a close look at Caleb Williams' film, and Sims and I had a chance to sit down and talk to him for 15 minutes at the scouting combine, our position was you keep Fields, you trade that first overall pick, you draft a lot more help, and you give Fields another season to maybe become the guy that he can be. So I just don't think he's had the full and fair opportunity. And we see this all the time. It happened to Geno Smith. It happens to other quarterbacks. You get a limited window to prove yourself. And if you don't, you're out. Look at Kenny Pickett. Maybe Kenny Pickett can develop into a great starter. Where's he going to get the reps? Where's he going to get the chances? So I think with Fields, we still don't know. And that's the good news for the Steelers. You may find out while he's a member of the Steelers, and you may keep him, and he could become – I mean, if you really are rooting between the two guys, no disrespect to Russell Wilson, I want the younger guy to become the starter because we'll keep him for 10 or 15 years in Pittsburgh.
Exactly. Hey, Mike, we got to run because we got a Pirate guest coming up next because they just won a game in Cincinnati. Thank you so much. We'll talk next week.
See you guys.
There you go, Mike Florio.